Support for the Exchange podcast from NHPR comes from you, our subscribers,
and New Hampshire School Administrators Association, representing school superintendents and administrators, championing the education of children in our state every day since 1941. In today's ever-changing world, public education matters, and so does its leaders. Online at nhsaa.org.
And from the New Hampshire Department of Agriculture, Markets, and Food. New Hampshire's farms and farmers markets are full of fresh goods, rich with agricultural heritage, and available all year long. You can locate pick-your-own farms, farmers markets, fairs, and more near you using the directories at visitnh.gov/agriculture.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. New Hampshire's Health and Human Services Commissioner, Jeffrey Myers, is with us today, and we'll cover key responsibilities that have put his agency in the headlines recently, including the state's new 10-year mental health plan, the new hub-and-spoke system aimed at combating substance abuse, also ongoing concerns about New Hampshire's child protection system. As always, we'll take your questions, too, so join us. Our email, exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org. Use Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange, or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. And Commissioner Myers, welcome back. It's good to see you. Thanks for being here. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me this morning.
I'd like to start with the new 10-year mental health plan, Commissioner Myers, because, as you know, many people believe a severe lack of mental health care is a key reason for the opioid addiction crisis that we're seeing and for some of the problems in the child welfare system. So let's just start there. Many people say, as I'm sure you know, that New Hampshire's mental health system used to be quite admirable, the envy of many other states. It has since deteriorated, as again, I'm sure you know. Why do you think this happened, Commissioner Myers?
Well, I think the causes are many. You know, there was a 10-year mental health plan developed in 2008 that was trying to build upon a lot of the good work and best practices that the state engaged in, the department engaged in, that the providers engaged in. But then the recession came, and it was a very deep recession. It really affected state revenues. At the time, I was counsel to Governor Lynch and worked with him in trying to help manage the state through a very, very difficult time. So the investments that the legislature and the governor and the department wanted to make in 2008 really weren't able to go forward because of the impact of that recession. So we started again, and there was an effort led initially by Representative Danielson in Bedford, and I give him credit for kind of expressing tremendous interest in kind of looking at what we should be doing for a new 10-year mental health plan. It enjoyed bipartisan support in the legislature. I can't say enough about the process that the stakeholders went through. I mean, everybody who touches mental health issues in New Hampshire really came together in such a positive way last year. We hired a facilitator. It was Antioch out in Keene, Antioch College, and they provided facilitation services. And we brought providers together. But most importantly, we brought people with lived experience into the process so we could hear from them about what they were going through, what services they need, what their perspectives were on our mental health system.
What did they add to that discussion?
You know, they added so much. They added the reality of how they deal with mental health issues, either themselves or in their families, loved ones, and friends, every day, how they access or aren't able to access services, what services are there, what services are not there, where are the gaps. And so that's what the process really focused on. And we brought forward and published in mid-January this year about a 70-page report or so with 14 very specific recommendations around a whole continuum of services that we think the mental health system in New Hampshire needs.
Well, everyone in the mental health field that we've talked to on The Exchange, and we've done tons of coverage on this issue, says the system will only be able to improve so much until Medicaid reimbursement rates go up. One provider we talked to said, look, we live or die by these rates, basically. Let's just break this down, if we could, Commissioner Myers, for listeners. What is a Medicaid reimbursement rate, and how does New Hampshire stack up?
Sure. So New Hampshire has a Medicaid program, as every state does. It's a voluntary program. States aren't required to have one. But if they have one, then they have to have rates that ensure access to services.
In other words, providers are paid enough so that they will take these patients.
Correct. And so New Hampshire, over time, both in the managed care space more recently, but even before that, when we were paying fee for service, was when the service was provided, a fee was paid. We would establish rates using an actuary to ensure that the amounts we were paying were sufficient to provide access to those services, and there would be willing providers to provide those services. The federal government essentially splits the cost of Medicaid services.
It's a 50-50 sharing
program
with the states.
For most people, although kids are still reimbursed at a higher rate. They're currently being reimbursed at 88%. That's going to go to 65% pretty soon. It will come down a little bit. But essentially, for every dollar that the state spends in general funds, the federal government will match. And that helps, obviously, make the program sustainable. So providers, mental health providers, whether they be the community mental health centers or other mental health providers in the state, they are reimbursed for providing their services, and they get a rate that the state establishes. We have what's called a fee schedule, which is published.
Which is said to be very low, Commissioner Myers.
Well,
I've often heard that our rates are among the lowest in the nation, so it makes me wonder about access to services if providers are being paid so little.
Yeah, the point I would make about that, and we can compare rates across, I mean, every state is different. I understand that there's a feeling out there that our rates are low, and they are low compared to other states, but the structure of New Hampshire's delivery system and the cost of services here aren't necessarily the same as they are in states like New York or California. And so it's hard to compare every state to one another. I will tell you that CMS, the federal government, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, have to review and approve our rates. And so when we provide mental health services through managed care, that has to be determined. The rates have to be held to be sufficient by an actuary.
So the feds are
reviewed
looking at this,
every
you're saying.
Year, and the feds oversee it. And in fact, as you may recall, and some of our listeners this morning may recall, back in 2008 or 9, the hospitals sued over low Medicaid reimbursement rates. And as a result of that, we supported what's called the disproportionate share program, which is uncompensated care for hospitals. And the state put more money into supporting hospitals as a result of that. What I can also tell you is this year, both in the governor's budget, because he included an increase or sustained an increase in mental health rates.
In mental health rates, not the overall Medicaid rate.
Yeah, not every single Medicaid rate. I mean, Medicaid provides a range of services.
But
in terms of mental health services, the governor recognized the importance of ensuring access and increasing access given the increasing demand for mental health services in New Hampshire, and included a $3 million a year rate increase for mental health rates that are paid to the community mental health centers. He also included money for designated receiving facilities. Those are beds that are in the community and at New Hampshire Hospital where individuals who are suffering from mental illness and need to be treated can be treated. And so there's a recognition there as well that we want to support the providers, the hospitals particularly, and one non-hospital provider, the Cypress Center in Manchester, who provide these community-based mental health beds, if you will.
So it seems sort of piecemeal, Commissioner Myers, higher rates for these providers, higher rates for these facilities. But as you know, providers across the board, no matter what the health service they are providing, say, these rates are too low. We have a severe workforce shortage. We're not going to get out of this workforce shortage unless we pay people more. I understand that higher cost states like Massachusetts or New York might be able to pay more, but Vermont also pays a lot more across the board in terms of Medicaid. So I just wonder what you think about Medicaid rates being so low here in New Hampshire and contributing to this very severe workforce shortage that we're seeing in these healthcare sectors.
Yeah, I mean, one question I'd ask is, and you can make an argument that the higher rate that you paid might be able to attract some additional workforce, but there's also a question of supply of the workforce. It's not just a function of what you're paying for salary. It's, do people want to come to New Hampshire? Are we developing the programs and opportunities and helping people, for example, coming out of whether it's college or a master's degree or some other type of professional training that have student loans? So how are we supporting and enticing those individuals to come and to provide services in New Hampshire? We have a shortage, for example, of MLADACs. That's master's level drug and alcohol counselors who are part of the overall treatment system in New Hampshire. So it's just not a question of the rate that we're paying, but I think a range of features that we've got to provide in order to attract the workforce.
What other features besides pay?
Well, like loan repayment, you know, specific training programs that may not be at a master's level, but may be at a certificate level or even an associate's level that would help bring more people into the workforce. And, you know, the governor and others, other commissioners are working together now in an effort. I've been working with the chancellor of the community college system and the commissioner of economic development, Taylor Caswell, Ross Cattell and Taylor Caswell, to make sure that we are providing the types of training programs that will be attractive to people who come into these fields. That's a part of it as well. But to your point, to answer your question directly about Medicaid rates, look, CMS approves our rates every single year. So we feel that we're in the range of what is acceptable. It's obviously up to the governor and the legislature to work together and ensure that that they feel comfortable where the rates are as well. And as you may know, there are bills in the legislature this session that are obviously looking at the issue of Medicaid rates, not just for mental health services, but across the board.
State Senate passed a bill to increase reimbursement rates at a cost of about $3 million. I want to ask you a couple more questions about the new 10-year mental health plan, Commissioner Myers, and then I'm really interested in the new hub and spoke system, now called The Doorway, to greatly improve access to substance abuse treatment services in the state. There's some really interesting numbers and developments there. But a few more questions about mental health, please. There's new bipartisan agreement that the state needs to build a state-run psychiatric facility to get rid of the secure psychiatric unit now associated with the state prison.
Yes.
Families who have loved ones there say, hey, they've committed no crimes. They just have severe mental illness. What's the timeline for that, Commissioner Myers?
It's a really important thing to do, and the governor put it in his budget, and I actually testified yesterday in front of the House Finance Committee about this as well. So the proposal is to move the individuals who are civilly committed by the court system to the secure psychiatric unit out of the state prison and into a new facility that would be sized at 60 beds. There are currently about, I think, 27 or 28 individuals who are civilly committed in the so-called SBU today. And then in addition to those individuals, there are patients at New Hampshire Hospital who have been adjudicated by the court system as either not guilty by reason of insanity or incompetent to stand trial, who do not need, they need services, but they do not need the level of acute care that New Hampshire Hospital is really established to provide. And so there's maybe around 25 individuals there that would come out of New Hampshire Hospital, critically opening up space for people who are waiting in hospital emergency departments for treatment at New Hampshire Hospital, who need treatment at New Hampshire Hospital in an acute care setting. So a new 60-bed facility would allow us to move the state psychiatric unit, the civilly committed, out of the SBU. It would allow us to safely and appropriately move about 25 patients out of New Hampshire Hospital to a more appropriate facility. And then lastly, we have a small facility in Laconia that is only 6 beds, that treats individuals who have committed very serious crimes but who have developmental disabilities. And they would be moved as well to this new facility. The state would go through a procurement process to establish the facility. And I think if we got approval in this budget that hopefully will be passed by the end of June, then I think we can have a new facility up and running and serving people within 2 years. The state would have to decide, are we going to run this facility ourselves or are we going to also procure the services to run the facility? But that's something that obviously we can all work together on. The important point is to really address, as the governor proposed in his inaugural inaugural address and then in his budget address, the situation of the state psychiatric unit and really transitioning people who shouldn't be there or more appropriately could be someplace that it has a better treatment model for them, as well as to move folks out of New Hampshire Hospital so that we can create the space that we need to address the inpatient bed challenge in the state.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned the emergency rooms. These are in regular hospitals that anybody would go to for a broken leg or some other emergency. And as you well know, they've been complaining for a long time about what they call the emergency room boarding crisis, where people in a mental health crisis have nowhere to go. They go to the emergency rooms. There are monthly counts of how many people have been waiting that month. Where is that count at now, Commissioner Myers? How are we doing with these emergency room waits that are very long for people in the throes of a mental health crisis?
They are, and they can be. And we're still challenged with the situation, which is why we're trying to approach reform at the New Hampshire Hospital, as I just talked about. So it's different for adults and kids. Right now, for example, we have 24 beds that are dedicated to children, that is under 18 years old, at New Hampshire Hospital, but we're running a census of kids of around 12 to 14 a day. There really are no kids that are waiting significantly at all right now. I think that's because of a few things. We entered into an agreement with Hempstead Hospital in the southern part of the state a couple of years ago. They had some additional beds that could be used on a voluntary basis. And so a lot of the kids that were waiting didn't need to be involuntarily admitted, but they needed voluntary services. They needed services, but they could elect to have those services. And so Hempstead's been extremely helpful to us. Adults is another matter. There are still, on a given day, sometimes, 20, 30, or 40 adults. We seem to be down from the high of a year or so ago where there were 60 or 70 on some days that were waiting, but there's still too many people who are having to wait. And that's why we've really, the governor in his budget and the department are focused on hopefully securing legislative approval for two big initiatives. You've mentioned one already, the new 60-bed psychiatric hospital. We also, the governor also has in his budget funding for 40 transitional beds in the community. So it's not just okay to take people out of New Hampshire Hospital if you don't have the step-down facilities in the community.
That's
then you're
the
just going to fill up the beds again.
When
the
you say that community, which community are we talking about?
Well, they would be put across the state. I mean, there are needs in the North Country because there are people coming from the North Country for services, obviously, to New Hampshire Hospital. There are needs on the seacoast and the western part of the state. But we've also got a proposal to move the children out of New Hampshire Hospital to another facility, which is located in Nashua. We are working with Solution Health, which is the new parent company of Southern New Hampshire Medical Center and Elliott Hospital. And they have space in Nashua at the so-called Brookside building. It was built as a psychiatric treatment facility. They do outpatient services there now. So we are in discussions with them, if the budget passes, to be able to renovate the space down there, move the kids out of New Hampshire Hospital down in Nashua, and a facility that is really more appropriately designed for children. And that would open up, again, additional significant space, number of beds at New Hampshire Hospital for people who are waiting at hospital emergency departments. I think if we made those two moves, we would eliminate the ER waiting challenge that we currently have in the state.
And you're using the word would because it's all dependent upon the budget,
right? Depends on the budget.
And that's going to come up at the end of the month. The end of the session.
Right. Well,
session
as you know, it's a process.
June.
Right now it's in the House, so we're working with House Finance to get it through the House. It will then go to the Senate. The Senate will start soon after it gets the budget. And then hopefully we'll end up in early June with a budget that will allow us to undertake these two very critical reforms.
Coming up, Commissioner Myers, we should pivot to the state's new hub and spoke system for addiction treatment, which has been renamed The Doorway. We'll talk about how that's rolling out in communities around the state and some of the numbers that have come in showing what people are seeking treatment for. We'll start taking your calls, too, so join us, 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email for Commissioner Myers. It's exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org. And we'll be right back.
Civics 101 has done hundreds of shows about how the government works.
But we realized that we missed a step, something bigger.
All right, step right up, gentlemen. Don't miss your chance to commit treason.
Our nation, our government, is all built on paper and ink.
That's why we made a six-part series on the founding documents, the pieces of paper that make us us, or rather, we. Subscribe or listen online at civics101podcast.org. Civics 101 is a production of NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, Health and Human Services Commissioner Jeffrey Myers discusses his agency's work on some of the state's toughest problems: addiction, mental health, also child protection. Let's hear from you. Your thoughts, questions, personal experiences, of course, are welcome. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange, or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. And Commissioner Myers, let's spend some time digging into the state's new hub-and-spoke system for addiction treatment. As I said, has been renamed the Doorway. Just for the uninitiated, Commissioner Myers, people who haven't been following this as closely right. as you or me, what is the role of the hub in this system?
Yeah. So the state has established the Doorway system, known as kind of a hub-and-spoke system, where there's a central organization. There are seven hospitals participating, and Granite Pathways, a nonprofit organization, is running the hubs in Manchester and Nashua. There are seven hospitals that I'll identify in a minute that are running them elsewhere. And we took money that we got recently from the federal government to combat the opioid crisis in New Hampshire. Over 2 years, we got $45 million. And we gave about $9 million a year for the two-year grant to the hubs. And what the hubs are really charged with doing, and this is really, for the first time kind of happening now in New Hampshire, is that we are coordinating the assessment and referral for treatment to services and the care coordination of the patients who come into the hub, either by walking through one of the doorways or calling 211, which is the number we've stood up that's run by Granite United Way, and I thank them for all their support and working with us on this so that people can call in and get connected to services. So the hubs are responsible, firstly and foremostly, to coordinate the care and to track the patient so that we know at the time of assessment and then 30 days later and 60 days later what's happening with that patient. Where were they, what was their diagnosis? Where were they referred to treatment? Who is currently treating them? What services have been billed? And that information is all kept in a centralized system that they are responsible for maintaining and reporting back to the state. The hubs are also charged with distributing naloxone or Narcan to ensure that that there's adequate supply of that in the communities, in their communities, so that people who need access to Narcan, which is a compound that's used to revive someone who's overdosed, is there as well. But it's really this care coordination, tracking the information, tracking the treatment of services. They also have been given money, which we call flex funds, where they can help reduce barriers to treatment. So if someone, for example, is in the North Country and the nearest treatment provider, let's say, is in Littleton or Berlin, that there's money where they can be given a voucher for a cab or an Uber or something like that. So there's transportation, there's housing support, there's other kind of, it could be used for child care, temporary kind of child care if that was needed.
So typical barriers that prevent
yes.
people from getting the treatment that they want.
That's gone to the hubs that they're helping to oversee that as well.
So Commissioner Myers, just to be super clear, so the hubs don't offer treatment on the spot like they do in Vermont, besides naloxone, which is, again, the overdose reversal drug.
Well, the hubs are, so Granite Pathways is not a direct provider, but like a hospital is, but Granite Pathways in Manchester and Nashua are ensuring that there are services, treatment services and peer recovery services and other support services for people coming in for treatment with the spokes in those cities. And then the other hospitals, so it's AVH up in Berlin and Littleton Regional Healthcare and Cheshire Medical Center, Concord Hospital, Lakes Region General Hospital, Wentworth Douglas on the seacoast, and Dartmouth as well in the Upper Valley in the Lebanon area. And so, for example, up in Berlin with AVH Androscoggin Valley, there aren't a lot of other treatment providers up there. So they are allowed to provide. So some of the hubs are providing some direct services.
Sure, some of those
and
hospitals.
And that was part of the idea in the beginning. I mean, we have to maintain conflict of interest policies so that there's not self-referrals by the hubs. The federal government requires that. But when there's no other option, then a hospital in Berlin, New Hampshire, or even in Cheshire County or in the Lakes region and so forth, they need to be able to provide services.
Sure,
so
that if someone is comes in for treatment,
in,
you want to give them treatment.
The program as well.
I have to ask you about Granite Pathways. We did a big event in Nashua a couple months ago, and there were some concerns there that Nashua and Manchester already have safe stations up and running. They already have a system of referral and treatment. And we heard some concern, Commissioner Myers, that there would be confusion, maybe even chaos, as you try to mesh these two systems, the old and the new.
You know, we don't think that's happening at all. I think the program started on January 1st. There's obviously, ramping up and getting everybody working together. But we've stayed in touch very closely. I've been to Manchester several times, meeting with the mayor and other stakeholders in Granite Pathways in Manchester. Chief Goonan as well, obviously, who has been overseeing safe
stations
in Manchester.
He's the fire chief, right?
He's the fire chief in Manchester. I've also been down in Nashua. I've met with the leadership, the city leadership in Nashua, to make sure, and I maintain contact with both mayors frequently to make sure that they feel that things are going well. And if things aren't going well, if there's an issue, that those issues get addressed. I think we've made a lot of headway in the last number of weeks since this program's been up and running. And I think that, yes, Safe Stations is continuing to operate in Manchester and Nashua. It's being supported by the community. Granite Pathways is interacting with it very positively, with the organization very positively, to ensure that no matter what doorway, if you will, no matter what, how somebody comes into the system, that their treatment needs are addressed. And that's the that's really the goal here. And Safe Stations is acting as a spoke in both Manchester and Nashua to that extent.
Let me remind our listeners, Commissioner Myers, that they can join us. We're talking right now about the state's new system for tackling opioid and other substance abuse. And if you have experience with this system or questions or comments about what you've seen rolling out in your community, we'd love to hear from you. Our number here in the exchange is 1-800-892-6477. Our email, exchange@nhpr.org. Again, exchange@nhpr.org. Granite Pathways, I do have one more question for you about that, Commissioner Myers. Given what happened with Serenity Place, which went under in Manchester, leaving many people suddenly without care, how much oversight will your department have over Granite Pathways?
We have oversight over all our contracted providers, and we are certainly exercising oversight in this system as well. We want to make sure that the providers who are engaged in all of our important efforts, whether it's mental health or substance use disorder, really have the resources that they need to operate, and they're operating, they're using the money appropriately, that they're accountable to the state because we're accountable to the federal government. We've undertaken an audit program for our substance use disorder providers, what we started over a year ago. We've audited a number of the 14 providers already. These audits are not gotcha audits. They're to allow us to go in to ensure that things are working well. And if we see issues or gaps in the programs, we can work with the providers to help address them. So we are exercising oversight.
Because that was a concern, Commissioner Myers, right? Correct me if I'm wrong, that we had this opioid crisis. All of a sudden, all these groups rushed in to try to help. Some of them were more capable than others. And we did see some problems occur, like Serenity Place.
Serenity Place was a real issue. The Attorney General did an investigation into that whole matter and concluded that there was really just a massive failure of oversight by the Board of Directors of that organization. And there was really a failure of leadership in that organization. And, I think so we've taken steps as a department, working with the legislature and the governor to ensure that our providers are able to provide the services that we're contracting for and that they're doing it the right way. And so we work very closely with them. We have this audit program. We stay in touch with our providers. I think Granite Pathways is doing a great job so far, both in Manchester and Nashua with the hub. They're also running the Adolescent Treatment Center at the Sununu Center in Manchester for kids with substance use disorder. And that's going well as well.
I have to say, I Googled Granite Pathways yesterday doing research for this show, and I got this screen. I got it again this morning. Yep. The Granite Pathways website is currently under construction. Please check back in a few weeks. That seems a bit concerning, Commissioner Myers, given the urgent need of people looking for addiction treatment right now. Come back in a few weeks. There's a phone number, to be fair.
Well, that's the point, though, I think. We're not relying on somebody's website. We're relying on a centralized system. So there's a place, a physical location in both Manchester and Nashua where people can walk in during normal business hours.
Gotcha.
And then there's 211, and I can't say that enough in this show, that if somebody needs services or if someone has a loved one or family member or friend who needs services, call 211. You will be connected to someone who can do an evaluation and assessment over the phone and make sure that you're connected, whether it's Granite Pathways in Manchester and Nashua, whether it's Concord Hospital here in Concord. They have a storefront that is not at the hospital. It's downtown on Pleasant Street. And so each of the hospitals has, each of the hubs has a storefront, if you will, has a place where people can walk in. So we really want to centralize how someone accesses these services. So I hadn't looked at that particular webpage. I will, but our goal is not to have people scattering to different websites. It's really to come in either physically at one of the physical locations or to call 211.
Well, and maybe it's about that human connection. If you speak to a human being on the phone or you see a human being behind a desk who wants to help you, maybe you're more likely to stick with it.
Yeah.
I did want to ask you about the Doorways numbers. Some new numbers came out just recently. This program just started when, Commissioner Myers?
January 1st. It actually got turned on and 211 started helping people on New Year's Eve.
So where are we at with the numbers? How many people are accessing this new hub and spoke or doorway
program? So in the first 60 days, there's over 900 people who have accessed it either from calling 211 or really physically walking in to one of the doorways. There have been, in the first 60 days, about 381 calls into 211. There have been over 450 referrals to treatment. There have been hundreds of clinical evaluations. And interestingly enough, what we're finding is that the people coming in and seeking treatment, it's not just opioids. It's also other drugs, other substances, and alcohol as well. And there's a fair number, actually, who are coming in and seeking treatment for alcohol
abuse. I looked at the numbers
abuse.
Yesterday. That was interesting. Alcohol was up there.
It is. And so the federal money that we are using in the system for opioid response is really following those patients with an opioid diagnosis. However, no one's being turned away at all. So if someone has an addiction, whether it's alcohol or cocaine or any other type of drug, they can come in and they'll be treated. And there's Medicaid reimbursement that is available. And there's also sliding scales for people who are uninsured if they're not eligible for Medicaid. What we're finding is the far majority of people coming in are either on Medicaid or they're eligible for Medicaid. So whether it's opioid or whether it's some other addiction, there's money available to help fund that treatment.
So even though the federal grant is to combat opioid addiction, you're seeing numbers of other people coming in for alcohol.
Right.
There was some cocaine.
Right.
There was some marijuana.
Yes.
You're not saying, sorry,
no,
marijuana addict or cocaine addict, we're turning you away. You're taking care of everybody.
Absolutely. And there's different funding streams that will pay for those individuals.
I want to remind our listeners that you can join us again, our number here in the exchange, for you to talk with Jeffrey Myers, Commissioner of New Hampshire's Health and Human Services Department, is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. And Michelle sent us an email from Chester, Commissioner Myers.
Yep.
She says, to follow up to Commissioner Myers' comments on workforce development, I'm curious about his thoughts on SB 308. Does he think the initiative set forth in that bill will address some of the issues that lead to workforce shortages in New Hampshire? And my wonderful team, Commissioner Myers, looked up SB 308. It includes the following: increases provider Medicaid reimbursement rates, which we talked about, by 5% by 2020, 7% by 2021. Also, the bill incentivizes healthcare degrees, among other ideas. So here we are again, Commissioner Myers, going back and forth over this Medicaid reimbursement rate and whether that is a key problem here.
Right. Right. And that's what Senate Bill 308 is focused on. I think it was Representative Cindy Rosenwald, who sponsored that bill. And it clearly is moved through the Senate. It's getting a lot of attention. It would raise Medicaid reimbursement rates across the board for every type of service.
How do you feel about
it? So mental health, SUD, long-term care, nursing rates, and so forth. Look, I think this is something the legislature should do from time to time, is to look at Medicaid reimbursement rates. We have to ensure we have a budget that's sustainable and that can be funded over time. Right now, our economy is red hot. We have, I think, the lowest unemployment rate in the country right now. And revenues have been very, very strong. But there'll come a day when those revenues aren't as strong. And I think, you know, the task of leadership, whether it's the governor or a department or the legislature, is to not only look at what we do when the economy is running well, but to plan for the day when the economy may not be so strong. So what happens if there's a recession in 2021 or 22? And I certainly hope there's not. But the business cycle is such that at some point there'll be another recession. So in evaluating to what extent we should raise Medicaid rates now, we need to look at how that's going to be sustainable over time.
So one side of the argument that I hear you making, Commissioner Myers, don't raise the rates if it isn't fiscally sustainable in the future. The other argument could be, and I wonder what you think, the economy could be brought down by all these people who desperately need services.
Right.
If people get help with their untreated mental illness or their substance abuse, they can become the productive members of society that they
want. And that's why there has to be a balanced and informed discussion. I mean, 308 would raise all the Medicaid rates by 5% and 7%. Are those the right numbers? I'm not certain, but I think there's a very good discussion going on right now, and I think everyone's trying to work together, and at the end of the day, hopefully there'll be a consensus about where Medicaid rates will be for the state.
So to answer Michelle's question, sounds like you're uncomfortable in your role weighing in on a specific yes or no, this is a good idea, yes or no.
I think there's a lot of moving pieces of the budget right now. I think 308 is one of them, but I think we need to continue to look at everything until it all kind of comes together. I think one of the important things is to take a look at what revenues are going to be in April. I mean, the House has got its revenue estimates, but the Senate usually waits because they have the luxury of waiting.
It's kind of unfair.
Because
they get
of the calendar,
numbers.
They see what revenues are going to come in April. And April is a very big tax month for business taxes. So I think the concept of looking at and evaluating whether we should be adjusting Medicaid rates, the governor's done so already. I mean, he's sustained an increase in mental health rates. We earlier had increased some substance use disorder rates. There's a separate bill also, I believe, by Senator Rosenwald that would put $3 million into mental health and substance use disorder rates. That's separate from Senate Bill 308.
Which is across the board for all these
and
providers.
And in part of the governor's budget, he raises rates very significantly for designated receiving facility services, those community beds for where inpatients can go for inpatient mental health services. So these bills all have to be coordinated, because otherwise, you know, how is 308 going to relate to the other bill that raises it by $3 million and so forth? So I think we've got a lot of work to do together to ensure that we understand how these bills are going to interact and where is the right balance for the state in this budget cycle.
Coming up, I've got one or two more questions for you, Commissioner Myers, about, again, the hub and spoke system. And I want to turn to the child protection system. As you know, that's been in the news a lot. Also, Medicaid work requirements. That's a big debate over at the State House. So all that's coming up. Stay with us. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
Keep NHPR in the loop. If you're a sustainer and you've received a new credit card, take a moment to update your payment information. Better yet, switch your sustainer payments to your checking account so you never have to update expired or replaced cards again. Giving as a sustainer for just $10 or $15 a month is the easiest and most powerful way to support the station that keeps New Hampshire connected. Update your information easily at nhpr.org.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on our show, two gun bills at the State House, expanded background checks, and a 7-day waiting period. Let us know what you think about these bills before the show. Our email, exchange@nhpr.org. And be sure to join us tomorrow morning, live at 9. This hour, Jeffrey Myers is here. He's the commissioner of the state's Health and Human Services Department, and we're taking your questions, too. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange, or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. So, Commissioner Myers, in our last segment, we talked a lot about Granite Pathways and the new hub and spoke system, and just this broader effort that the state is making with the help of a lot of federal dollars to combat opioid and other types of addiction. What are you learning 3 months out? This is big.
From the doorway?
From this whole effort, this big infusion of federal money, setting up this new hub and spoke system, now called the doorway.
I think the biggest takeaway that I've had thus far is the just the multifaceted complexity of the treatment delivery system. And what I mean by that is, so we have a public health issue in New Hampshire, which is the opioid crisis, another addiction crisis as well. And we need the system that can deal with that is so, it's multi-layered. It involves so many different types of providers and people and services. It implicates it has an implication for our child welfare system as parents have become opiate addicted, grandparents are raising kids. It has an impact on child care beyond adoption or foster care, if you will. And it says something about, I've learned a lot about what I think the state needs to build out into the communities. It's fine to have some central services like in Concord or the southern part of the state, but we really, although we're a small state, we have many regions. And so we really need to ensure, and we're trying to get that to that point with the doorway, of really building out a sustainable delivery system across the state that is capable of delivering not just substance use disorder services or mental health services, but also is going to look at like long-term care services or other public health related services. We have this integrated delivery network system that we stood up a couple of years ago with money from the federal government, a waiver that the federal government granted New Hampshire that's pumping in up to $30 million a year. That's to build capacity and some services as well, but it's to build the infrastructure in the state that we need. And I think once we stand that up and it's really complete, we need to look holistically at, now it's being used for behavioral health services, but that structure could be used for a wide variety of services.
So it sounds like this new system brought on, unfortunately, by the opioid crisis, could help with a number of other social problems that have bedeviled us for a long time.
It's building capacity. It's hopefully will have a positive impact on workforce over time. That's an issue that's not going to get solved overnight. It's going to take a lot of time to work on, but there's a lot of people that are working very hard on it right now. So I think what this mental health and substance use and child protection challenges that we've faced the last few years have really focused us on how do we build a system of care for all of our citizens, and how do we build that delivery system across the state so that we can respond to all these issues.
Let's take a call, Commissioner Myers. And this is Leah in Hopkinton. Hi, Leah. You're on the air. Thanks for being with us.
Hi. How are you?
Fine.
I'm just calling because I'm a private practitioner in mental health, and we have been inundated. We have a waiting list, and we actually are getting referrals from the community mental health centers. And what I wanted to understand is, are they also going to increase the rates for private practitioners and private groups in addition to the mental health centers? And then the second, and the second question is, would they, you know, they at this point let the mental health centers have licensure candidates be supervised and get Medicaid rates, but they don't allow the smaller groups to do that. And if they did, it could really open up a whole lot more services.
Leah, this is a great question. You talked earlier, Commissioner Myers, about the governor wanting to raise Medicaid reimbursement rates for the community mental health centers. Does that rate also rate increase also apply to private providers, as Leah
asks? It would apply to a provider who was Medicaid enrolled and was providing Medicaid services.
I see.
But private providers, as Leah, I'm sure, understands and knows, provide services to people who are insured other than Medicaid. Some have private insurance, whether it's one of the big commercial plans in New Hampshire or so forth, or some self-insured plan. So those rates are dictated by those private insurance companies, and they're regulated by the insurance department here in New Hampshire. And by the way, they have to there's a parity requirement, so mental health services to privately, commercially insured people have to be provided in the same way that acute care services are provided. But the Medicaid rates that the governor put into the budget that raised the rate from the fee schedule is really applicable to Medicaid-provided services.
Thank you for the call, Leah. And since we're talking about Medicaid, Commissioner Myers, I do need to ask you about the Medicaid work requirement that your department has been trying to put into place, facing pushback from State House Democrats and now a lawsuit. A couple questions for you, please. As you know, about half a dozen other states have tried to put these in place. They've run into logistical or legal trouble. Why do you think New Hampshire will have a better track record?
I think we're doing things, my sense is we're doing things differently in New Hampshire than some of the other states have done it, at least up until this point. So we understand that this is a hard population to reach. So the individuals who are subject to this new Medicaid work requirement are those able-bodied individuals in the Medicaid expansion coverage plan, which is now known as Granite Advantage in New Hampshire. And there's a total of 50,000 adults. That program is only for adults. It's not for kids. Kids are in standard Medicaid, and there's obviously no work requirement.
Or pregnant women.
Exactly.
Or people with disabilities. And
yeah. So, right. So there's 50,000. Then there are people who are medically frail. There are women who are pregnant or in 60 days postpartum. There are people with disabilities. There are people with serious mental illness. There are parents or caretakers of children under six who are statutorily exempt under the current law. So there's a lot of that group that will not be subject to the requirement. At the end of the day, there will be many who will be. And what that exact number is depends on some further analysis and depends on how many people come forward and seek what are what's called under the law a good cause exemption. So there are exemptions that were built into the law that basically blanketly exempt somebody from the requirement, someone who's seriously mentally ill. If you're medically frail, you're exempt, but you have to have a doctor certify that you're medically frail. And so we're working very intensively with that population, about 7,000 individuals who had self-identified previously as medically frail. But there will be people who will be subject to it. They don't have a statutory exemption, but may have some good cause. There's something going on in their life. There's a life event, whether it's a divorce or domestic violence or other type of event. It could be something much less than that. They could be ill and not be able to work for a period of time. They're going to be entitled to have good cause exemptions that get reviewed on a case-by-case basis.
So is that why our system will be better? Because
no,
we have so
our
many
system,
exemptions?
No, not just because of that. I think, most importantly, I think that it may work better in New Hampshire than it's worked in Arkansas to date because of all the work, the outreach and education that we are doing right now. So, for example, we have counseling sessions set up for this group in our district offices. We have 11 district offices across the state. So we have hours three times a week and staff that are prepared on a walk-in basis to sit down. There have been multiple letters sent to the population, to the Granite Advantage population. There are radio ads we've stood up on mostly AM stations across the state, but we've got radio ads still running on 98 stations. And we've got our Medicaid call center literally calling all 50,000 people in the program. So we've really undertaken a very significant outreach effort to try to educate. We're working with providers, with hospitals, with the medical society. We're reaching out to, because we're finding that some of these folks are taking the letters they get and going to their doctor and saying, what am I supposed to do with this? And so we're now going to work with doctors across the state to make sure that they understand how they can refer somebody back to be educated.
New Hampshire's requirement, according to national reports, is the toughest in the nation, 100 hours a month of either work or community service or education. Why is that, Commissioner Myers?
That's the decision the legislature made, that 100 hours was a standard
last
that they
session.
Want. Yes, last year. And other states, I think there are one or two other states, I think, that are 100 hours. Now, there are several states that are at 80 hours a month. But it really is in this range between 80 and 100 hours.
As you know, State House Democrats have spoken out against these requirements. They file bills to ease them a bit or eliminate them. They are concerned that requirements will lead to people losing their coverage. You've talked about this big outreach effort,
right.
Commissioner Myers. I'm wondering, though, is there a psychological effect? People hear, ooh, work requirement. I'm not sure if I make it. I don't want to get on their radar, so just forget it. I'm not even going to try. I give up.
Well, that's why we're working so hard right now. And the first month of compliance is not till June, so no one has to actually earn any hours or account for any qualifying activities or any exemptions until the month of June. And we've got a lot more that we're doing between now and then.
Is there more staff needed on your end to continue this outreach effort, to get people up to speed on what's required, to track the monthly documentation that will eventually be needed for people to certify that their work hours are legit? You're going to need to hire more staff on your end to take
care
of this.
Well, right now we're handling it with the staff that we have, and we have to see how it goes. And what I've told the governor and I've told key legislators is that as we get into the program, we're going to evaluate how it's working, and if we find that we need more staff, we'll certainly ask for it. Right now, I think we're able to handle what we're doing. A lot of the exemptions, in fact, are being determined automatically already. They're verified by our system. For example, we have an eligibility and payment system that can identify, you know, who has received services related to a pregnancy, who's 60 days postpartum, who has kids who are under 6 years old, who are medically frail. I mean, that information
already
is
exists.
Already part. We've already been sending letters out advising people that they're exempt from this work requirement. So we're already taking those steps.
One last question on this, Commissioner Myers. As you know, court decisions are expected this week in Arkansas and Kentucky on lawsuits filed against Medicaid work requirements there. How relevant will these be to New Hampshire's efforts, Commissioner
Well,
Myers?
I want to make two points, if I could quickly. One is that the individuals who filed the lawsuit against New Hampshire last week, they didn't file against New Hampshire. They filed against the federal government relative to
for
the
allowing
New Hampshire
these to go
work
forward.
Requirement. They did not challenge how New Hampshire's implementing the requirement. They challenged federal authority based on federal law, whether the federal Secretary of Health and Human Services has the authority to condition eligibility in the Medicaid program to a work requirement. So there are federal kind of national legal issues that were raised in the suit. You're right, there's a judge who sits in Washington, D.C., who's presiding over the Kentucky and the Arkansas cases, who has said or indicated in some manner, or his office has indicated in some manner, that he may rule as early as April 1st on the Kentucky lawsuit that has been briefed and argued in front of the federal court in the District of Columbia. So we'll have to look at that decision. We'll have to see what it says and whether or not it affects our program. But, you know, we have moved thoughtfully so far in implementing this, and we're going to continue to be thoughtful in how we implement it.
I have to pivot very quickly with you, Commissioner Myers, to an issue that we have done tons of coverage on that I know you have looked a lot at, and that has to do with the Division of Children, Youth, and Families. This is a huge topic, as I said, but there's one number that kind of encapsulates, I think, for a lot of people, the progress or lack thereof on this issue, and that's the number of caseloads per social worker at the Division of Children, Youth, and Families. Again, these are the people who are working on the ground with troubled families, kids who could be neglected or abused. What's that ratio at now, Commissioner Myers?
It's 45. It's ticked up a bit. It was down in the mid-30s, and we had seen some progress. But what's happened is, and I want to give you all the numbers, we're getting in 1,000 new assessments per month. The last 3 months, I think it's been slightly over 1,000 a month. And that's I think that's being driven by a number of factors. There's obviously a lot of awareness out there of abuse and neglect now because of all the stories and publicity. But there's also a public service campaign, which is very good. And I want to make clear that I support the public service campaign. It's called Know and Tell. And it's run by the Children's Alliance, the Child Advocacy Centers, I think, may be involved in it as well in New Hampshire. And that campaign is that if you see or know something about potential child neglect or abuse, you're supposed to tell and report it. And we think that the rollout of that campaign has been the last several months. And although it is a very valuable and useful and important public awareness campaign that I fully support, it's driving calls into our call center.
So greater awareness is a good thing,
and,
but it does mean more cases for your social workers to deal with.
And there are calls that have, where we have real concern, we have concerns and we follow up immediately, but there are calls that come in that are maybe not as concerning for a variety of reasons. And so the number of assessments is going up. The caseload now, as I said, is 45. We've got 129 social workers who are handling the assessments. 129 positions authorized. 110 of those are filled. There are some that are still in training. So we're about 91 or 92 actually carrying a full caseload. And then on the family service side, so if an assessment is found and becomes a case and we keep it, we've got 102 family service workers position authorized right now. 94 of those positions are filled, and there are 78 that are carrying full caseloads, so there are some still in training. I think one of the most important things, and the legislature has worked on this, and I've got to commend everybody, the governor and the legislature have worked on a very bipartisan basis on these DCYF issues these last few years. And we've gotten a lot new money for voluntary services. There's more money coming in the next budget, I hope, for voluntary services so that we can address needs of families so that these assessments over time are going to obviously decrease. But it's a continuing challenge.
And their efforts in the legislature to put even more positions
absolutely.
In the budget.
Absolutely. And we support that.
All right. Commissioner Myers, there's a lot more we could have talked about. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
That's Jeffrey Myers. Again, he is the commissioner of New Hampshire's Health and Human Services Department, the state's largest agency. He was appointed to that role in 2016. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. And remember, our conversation always continues online, on Facebook, and at nhpr.org. Our engineer is Dan Colgan. Our senior producer is Ellen Grimm. Our producers are Jessica Hunt, Christina Phillips, and Ali Oshinsky. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord, and I'm Laura Knoy.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you liked what you heard, spread the word. Give us a review on Apple Podcasts to help other listeners find us. And thanks.